7654321.
You'll never have the sacred stone.
Oh, this you crazy mother.
Welcome, friends, to episode 19 of Color of Magic. As we're trucking right along, I am your host, Daquan Watson, and as always, my friend Brian Allen is with us. How are you doing this week, dude?
Doing good. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. It's been a fairly busy and interesting week, so we have a lot we're going to get to talk about. Had some interesting experiences this week, so I've been quite busy. How about yourself?
Oh, yeah. It's been some crazy stuff going on with the YouTube and Twitch and family channel. And by the way, we have done the YouTube video I talked to you a little bit about last week with going behind the scenes of the podcast for our YouTube viewers. That is ready if people want to go check that out on Allen's Ever After.
Yeah, man. It's funny because, you know, we always joke around kind of off the air about everybody's got a little bit of a side hustle. But it's cool when you see all your different projects kind of coming together. And when you can merge them, that's even better.
Exactly.
So let's hop right in and see, what did we learn this week? I actually had a really cool experience. And okay, so I was streaming, I think this was Tuesday night. And one of my viewers reaches out and he's like, hey, I need to do this project, and I was wondering if I could interview you. And I was like, all right, cool, because, you know, I've been interviewed for a bunch of things. It wasn't a big deal. Turns out he's from the Philippines, and they were working on, I guess, like a government-type project, and they needed to speak to people in different countries to find out about their, I guess, governmental systems, and then the, like, how it's affecting people or what your kind of things are going on in your social climates and stuff like that. So it was really interesting to see that several of the things we're dealing with, they're dealing with, but then seeing where the differences were too. It was really, and it was already kind of tough because there were three of them and we're trying to do this on Skype, and one of them has kind of like spotty internet and
spotty internet. Oh no.
Yeah, exactly. But it's also like I'm doing this, like I got done at midnight. We started the interview at like 12:15. So it's already like at the end of a long day. But it was pretty cool because like discovering, I know this is kind of not like not heavy magic content, but over in the Philippines, one of the issues they were describing to me that they have an issue with right now is that they don't even have enough businesses on the islands to even produce enough jobs if people wanted to work.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's not even about like people, like here our bigger issue is people being either undereducated or undertrained or whatever. Like there's some jobs that some people just can't fill for various reasons. Like there's just not even opportunity for that to even happen. So that was something that kind of caught me off guard. And you know, in regards to gaming, like it does make it harder for some games to make inroads over there because obviously like it's a tougher situation. There's fewer game stores, you know, all that stuff. So it was really enlightening. It's one of those things. If anybody wants to talk about it, feel free to catch me on our Discord or whatever if you're a patron, or send me a message on Twitter. But it's very, very cool. What about you, man? What did you learn?
I got another card, well, not banned, but nerfed. For those of you that have been watching some of my YouTube content and Twitch streams on Madden, I've been running Eric Dickerson into the ground, as a lot of us have, and they finally hit him with the nerf bat. It was, you know, they got tired of people having 400-yard rushing games. Sorry.
Are you saying in some way you were one of the first people to jump on Oko and get it banned, and then jump on the Eric Dickerson train and get that banned?
I mean, I would not consider myself the best player of either Magic or Madden, but obvious card is obvious, you know? When somebody's routinely getting 400 yards on the ground, okay, yeah, this is pretty good.
You know, I always tell people, like, if they give you the tools and you decide to use them, I can't blame you for it.
Yeah, it's not my fault. I didn't design it.
Fair, fair.
I didn't play test it. It's not my fault if no one at EA did either.
So yeah, the other cool thing this week, we kind of had a little bit of, I guess you want to call it tournament quiet time. We were in a dead zone, I guess is a better way to describe it, as we were building up to these players tour events that were coming up. So those, for those of you who don't know, last year Wizards switched over from having large pro tour events to having the smaller regional events that are being called players tour events. One will always happen in the Americas, one's going to happen in Europe, one's going to happen in Asia, or the APAC region, I should say. And they will always be around the same time, you know, within a 2-week window, it looks like, is their plan. So you can only participate in one of them for each season. But these are kind of like mini pro tours. And then the top so many places in these qualify for the Players Tour Final, which will also pit you against the other, I believe, MPL and Rivals members or whatever. So pretty cool. We had our first 2 Players Tour events happen over the weekend. So people were really excited. It was also Pioneer. So it was like the first, I guess we want to call it like pro level Pioneer showing that we've had since the format came about at the end of last year.
Sounds like a TLC show, you know, professional pioneering with the
corner. Yeah. You could steal that title. There's a new YouTube series if you want to do it. As if you're not busy enough, but if you want it, it's there for the taking.
It streams and channels. Somebody will do it. We put it out there. Somebody like it'll be out there next week and have 10,000 views because we said it.
Yeah, exactly. By the way, if somebody wants to steal it, feel free. We're not going to charge royalties.
I will. I was going
to. So yeah, so the first event, Pro Tour Belgium, or Players Tour Belgium, I should say. I'm going to have to get used to that. I'm so used to saying Pro Tour when you talk about Magic.
It's like LA San Diego Chargers. You just can't stop. You know?
Oh, it's about to get worse because you're going to have the, whatever, Las Vegas Raiders. So good luck with
I'm
that.
I'm going to say whatever city comes to mind with them because they're moving every 10 years now, roughly.
True, true. But yeah, so the event was won by Joel Larson, and he defeated Piotr Glogowski, who is, he's kind of like, Piotr's kind of become like the man, I don't know how to describe it. Like, it's almost like a meme to dislike him. Like, and I get it, right? Because you watch him on coverage from the Mythic Championship, and he's, you know, he's hitting all the emotes, and he's like, while his opponent's thinking, he's hitting the your go button 2 and 3 times, and, you know, just being generally a nuisance. And he doesn't seem like a bad person. Like, when I see him do interviews or see his interactions online, like, he seems like an okay dude. I don't know him personally, so I can't judge him for it. But I will say, when other people emulate the behavior, it starts to become bad.
Yeah.
And I've run into that a little bit on Arena. So, because of that,
they're not as talented, so it's extremely less enjoyable.
That's true. So now I end up in a situation where I kind of root against him. He's like my Triple H.
There you go.
Like, I appreciate your work. I like what you're doing. But, like, you're the heel, so I just got to cheer against you.
Which means he'll end up in control of Magic the Gathering NXT here in 10 years. It'll be cool to like him again.
Yeah, probably. But yeah, like I said, I don't, like, I don't think we talked about this before. Like, I don't think it's necessarily bad for there to be people to root against, right? Like, you don't, like, just having the person be there to be the heel and to root against them doesn't mean that that person is like an awful human being. Now, some of them can be.
Yeah.
And but I think it
find adds out about to, it. That's a whole different podcast.
That's true. But I think it leads to the narrative a little bit, right? Like, it's fun for the writers. It's fun for the viewers. And it just depends on, you know, if he's okay filling that role of the villain.
And I think
I don't know.
People are, I think especially as, you know, we become more accustomed to Twitch and esports, people realize when somebody has a, what you would call a stream persona, and they're playing it up, where if you meet them in person, they might, you know, they're probably just perfectly normal, nice even, but, you know, of course, this is for entertainment value now. People forget this sometimes.
Yeah, and I think that's exactly it, right? I think on some point, when we talk about viewership and whatnot, like, that, like, you, okay, let's put it this way. Okay, I'm a Cowboys fan, right? Like, if you're a football fan, you probably hate the Dallas Cowboys. You know, if assuming you're not a Cowboys fan, like the same way that like people hate the Yankees or you hate the Lakers or, you know, any of the big teams, right? Or I guess the Patriots are a better football example right now. Like, the Patriots are a good football team. The coach is good. The quarterback is good. But there's just enough there that you get to hate them, and it their games rate high. You know?
Exactly.
The Dallas Cowboys, we haven't
have, you know, three or four of the highest rated broadcasts at the end of the season every year.
Yeah, we haven't won a championship in 20 years, but they're still one of the highest drawing views.
And do three of the top four numbers.
Yeah. And I think the same thing can apply here. You know, now granted, the big story, or one of the big stories from these player tours events, is that the ratings were down as far as viewership. But I think it happened for multiple reasons. Like, one, your star power is kind of split up over multiple events, and people didn't know who was going to be competing in all of them or who wasn't. So obviously that's going to get you fewer eyeballs. The other is just time zones. I mean, you know, the events were starting at like 2 a.m., you know, and that was an issue all its own, because you're just not getting the majority of North America to watch, which is obviously the biggest Magic market. I will say, as far as the decks they were playing, Joel Larson was playing Sultai Delirium, and Piotr was playing Dimir Inverter. And really, the Inverter deck is kind of like the talk of Pioneer right now. Using a wonderful 6/6 Eldrazi creature to basically remove your library and take your graveyard and let it replace your library. And then using the new Thassa's Oracle to look at the top X cards, where X is your devotion to blue. And then magically, when you have no more cards to look through, you win the game.
God, that makes my head hurt. Just the description of it is like, oh, it does what now?
Yeah. And it's a real deck. I will say that. Like, it actually is a real deck. It's put up some numbers the last few weeks in online events and whatnot. So expect to see it a little bit. You know, from a speculation standpoint, the prices have already moved up on a lot of stuff. So there's probably not a lot of money to make unless you just happen to have some of these sitting around in a bulk box somewhere with some other junky rares from like Battle for Zendikar or something. But yeah, overall, I thought the event was interesting. The top eight decks were, there was at least some diversity among them. Yeah, overall, not a bad event, really. And the coverage was really good. So for those of you who have not watched it, it was really quality. There were some people doing their first time coverage on there, and they did a good job. So definitely go back, check out the VODs, and give it a look.
And folks, that is not, you know, that's a thankless job, because if you're bad, you hear it from everybody. A lot of times if you're good, people don't notice it. Like, oh, it went well, and nobody talks about it. So props for the good coverage. Absolutely.
I'm glad you said that, you know, because I've been in that seat, you know, having done commentary for a few events, and you'll get a few people who come up to you in person. They're like, oh man, that was really good. Or that like segment you did was really awesome. But online, you'll probably hear like crickets.
Yeah.
You know, but if you mess up like one card interaction, or you say one thing that doesn't make sense because you misspoke or whatever, oh man, you will get grilled.
I always knew, you know, at the paper when I had made a mistake, because boy, that light would be flashing as soon as I got to the office. You know, if you win a press award, you only hear about it from other journalists, but you misspell somebody's name and everybody and their grandma notices.
Yeah. And it's tough, because I always tell people, make it a habit to praise as much as you will demean. You know, because, you know, I tell people, if I go out to a restaurant and we have a good experience, I'll hop on and leave a positive review. Because I know that there's a bunch of people, you know, it's like the old saying, like, if for each negative experience, there's probably 10 positive ones, but the 10 positive ones didn't say a damn thing.
Yeah.
You know, but that one time you, like, the waiter's slow or they bring you the wrong drink or whatever, you get that person having a bad day and the dumb thing happens to them. It's going to be this, like, word wall of a review on Google or something.
Joker meme, everyone loses their mind.
Yeah, yeah. But anyway, okay, so we said there was a second Players Tour event, which there was, in Nagoya. So that was the APAC event, obviously. Kenta Hirane defeated Ken Yukihiro, which is great. I have to also say this, like, seeing these names like Ligowski, Larson, Yukihiro, like, doing well in these events is awesome because I think it also lends something to the credibility of these Players Tour events. That Definitely. The big names are still coming out, the big names are competing, they're putting it in real time, the prize money's worth it. Like, I think over time, that will make sure that these events have some weight to them. But Bant Spirits, which we hadn't seen in a while, managed to win over SRAM's Auras, which wasn't even on anybody's radar.
Yeah, that was the one I looked at like, wait, what? When did these results come out? What is this now?
Yeah, it's apparently a real deck.
Or not standard, but Pioneer, excuse me.
Yeah, and I will say Yukihiro is known for playing some different style decks. He plays a different style of Magic, so I'm not saying this is a deck everybody should play, but I'd recommend you probably practice with it a lot before you take it into a tournament. But it's cool. It works on SRAM, the card from Kaladesh, that whenever you play, I believe it's an aura, equipment, or vehicle, you get to draw a card. The deck is obviously loaded with enchantments and auras.
If you think about it, three different card types, you're going to draw you a card?
Oh, yeah. But the thing is, it doubles down on multiple enchantments to get bonuses for other enchantments. So these 1/1s and 2/2s you're playing are very quickly like 6/6s, you know, and you've drawn extra cards off of. So even if they kill your creatures or wipe your board, like, you don't greatly care. And it's playing a couple of new cards from Theros, like the black, I think it's the 1/2 has lifelink. Then if you have a creature die, you draw a card for each aura attached to it. So obviously in a deck that's got like 16 or 20 auras in it, you're getting to draw cards on top of the ones you drew whenever you played them. So like it's a really sweet little deck. If you haven't seen it, definitely go check it out. It's on the magic.gg page. They have like the results over there. Pretty awesome.
I am definitely going to check that out.
You should. It's great. But then there's a third Players Tour event in Phoenix this weekend. So it'll be interesting to see what happens when now everybody's had time to absorb all this other information from last week's events, and does it change the outcome of what would have been on this weekend? So there's going to be a lot of eyes on Phoenix for sure.
And it's February, so the weather will actually still be reasonably tolerable in Phoenix, huh? You'll be able to breathe for at least another week or two.
That's true. Phoenix does get hot as hell in the summer. I saw pictures from 2 years ago where somebody had the wheels melt on their trash can sitting on the street.
That sounds unsafe right there.
Yeah.
That's like fallout. Actually,
I think it was Phoenix where like 3 years ago they had shut down the airports for like 2 hours because the air got so hot that they couldn't actually get lift on the planes to get them off the tarmac.
That's frightening. Really? That just...
Yeah, it's crazy how hot it can get down there.
When you're so hot, you broke aerodynamics.
It's definitely too much. But that wasn't all the Magic we had this weekend. We also had a Star City team open. So there was even more Magic being played, which they look like they drew pretty normal. But, you know, you're on the East Coast. You get to keep the same time slot for all your events. So no surprise there. But the winning team, Well, first off, I guess I should preface this with being a three-format event. So they were playing Standard, Pioneer, Modern on each team. But Azorius Control in Standard, Dimir Inverter, not a surprise, we're seeing that again in Pioneer, and then Dimir Wurza in Modern, which is another Urza deck, but that's been one of the best decks in Modern for a little while. And then alongside that, there was also a Star City Standard Classic event that happened in the same location. And I just looked real quick, pulled your top three decks, and they were Azorius Control, Mono Red, and Simic Ramp. So thought that was pretty cool, seeing that Simic Ramp also made a couple of appearances throughout the top 16. So okay, that deck's still really strong. But Mono Red really holding its own in the current standard, even with all the blue-red control decks making appearances.
Because, hey, sometimes you don't draw your tricks and you just get burned alive. Or you don't draw fast enough.
I mean, I will say there is a lot of blue-white control on Arena right now if you're playing standard.
Yeah, I have noticed.
Now, it is still beatable, mind you, but it is a damn good deck. And it can be built a couple of different ways, too. So if you're targeting something in standard right now, I would say it should probably be the Azorius Control decks, for sure.
And since you brought that up, do you have any bullets we should target it with?
I will say this. The things I've been messing around with... Okay, so funny story. At the end of, I guess, last week or the week before, when the end of the month, so it would have been at the end of the last week when they were starting to get to the end of the season, I still was only at, like, Diamond 3, I think, with something like 3 days to go. So on my streams, I was like, okay, let's just find a different deck. And if I don't make Mythic, I don't make Mythic, but let's just play something fun for these last couple of days. So I get this, end up, somebody points out a mono green list, which I wasn't a huge fan of the list, how it was built, but I swapped some cards, made something I was comfortable with. And I'll be damned if we didn't run it up to Mythic with relative ease.
Wow.
I know, it sounds terrible. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, even, I think I got a little bit lucky, but other people I know who are just starting out playing Arena, they're playing it. Like, people have downloaded the stuff from my stuff I have up on Aether Hub and on my YouTube page. So it's getting some results. But
I was about to ask if it was the one you posted to YouTube.
Yeah. So what I started doing with it is I actually started playing Vivian's Arcbow. That card is a 2-cost. Artifact. It's a green artifact, but you can spend X and discard a card, and X lets you look at the top X cards of your library and take a creature that costs X or less and put it into play. The reason being is it gets around all the spell counters.
Yeah.
Or when they, you know, wipe your board, you're like, okay, cool, end of your turn, I'm gonna pay 4 or 5 mana, put this thing into play. And it really lets you be a little bit tricky. Also, if they're trying to, like, set something up to put in a graveyard to eventually get back in a turn or two, and then you can, like, flip through, get a couple things, and beat them down before they get to that actual part of the plan. You can do stuff where you get, like, Annihilia into play, so you're getting your next couple of cards cheaper on your following turn. Like, there's a lot of cool little tricky things you can do.
Because green totally needs more ways to get cards out cheaper. Am I right?
Well, sure. Yeah, that's not a thing you should be worrying about, but it is. And then when I was playing the Rakdos aggro deck, I've actually just started playing some main deck Shadow Spears. One, because they're life gain when you run into the mono red decks, but they also let you take away Hexproof from Dream Trawler. So if you actually do draw one of your removal cards, like, you can take a shot at killing a Dream Trawler and see what happens. And usually if you can kill a Dream Trawler, you can normally bring the game to a close, because that's usually their main win condition.
Yeah.
But that's what I've been doing. I don't know if I'd recommend it. There's probably better options. I mean, it's also possible. Oh, I will say, with the mono green list too, I was also playing 4 of the Shifting Ceratops in the sideboard, because Dream Trawler just can't block it. It's pro blue.
And you got the Mythic with it, so there may be, you know, there may be better options, but it sounded like it worked pretty well.
Yeah, so there's definitely some things out there, but, you know, I think right now the standard king of the hill is Azorius Control. If I were ranking decks right now, that's probably the one that's at the top you're going to see the most of. Also, because it's one of the easier decks to play. Like, you pretty much, other than occasionally having to guess what your opponent might be doing to sequence your cards in a certain way, most of the time you're just like, Banishing Light, remove a guy, you know, yeah, play this enchantment, draw a couple cards. Play Elspeth Conqueror's Death, exile a thing. All right, cool. I'll wipe out your board and kill two or three creatures. Like, there's not a lot of tricky things it's doing. You know, it's the cards are good and they're doing exactly what you think they would do. With all that being said, you pointed out something interesting to me that I think we do need to bring up, as there was an additional story to come out of this Star City crap. A crap story to come out of the Star City stuff, I should say. A woman by the name of Tania Russell posted about some very... I'm going to try to keep it PG-13 at the very least here. Something I was going to regret.
Yeah, I want
to. But some very crappy interactions she had with some people. Man, okay. My notes pretty much just say dudes need to quit being D's. And I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, I mean, it's like you want to use all the curse words.
But, man, like her entire situation really, and maybe not the entire thing. I think there are some parts in there that are just, some of her opponents kind of got caught up in the middle of everything, and then her already having a rough day, and, you know, but to even get her to that point, there were people genuinely treating her in ways that they wouldn't, at least I believe they wouldn't, if she wasn't a woman.
Yeah, like, you know, when they think she's played Astraland, talking to somebody else at the table instead of addressing her directly, for example. She did a thing. She did a wrong thing, you know, without talking to her face. She's right across from you.
And that's such a weird thing, because, like, I've told people before, like, obviously, I am friendly. I've run a retail store. I've worked with tons of people. But, like, when you sit across from me, I will give you the same respect whether you are 8 or 80 or you are man, woman, other, whatever. Like, I don't care. Like, you're still an opponent in a high-level event.
That's what you're supposed to do, you know?
Yeah. I mean, and here's the frustration for me. Is that if we're doing something like this podcast, we're trying to encourage opening your mind and get more people playing and whatever, and then there's crap like this happening out there, it really just undermines all the work everybody's doing.
And I will say, we don't want to, you know, we don't want to, you know, just reread her Twitter post per se, but if you go to her Twitter feed, there's a Twit Longer link where you can basically read the entire incident. We're just going to kind of hit some of the important points.
Oh, that's not even the worst of it, right? Okay. Small side rant incoming. I now have gotten to the point that I post one of our links for the podcast over on Reddit when I put it up. And, you know, immediately it gets upvoted to like 6, 8, 10, and then it gets downvoted, and by the end of the week it's like at 3 or something, right? It already tells me what people think about what we're doing in the game space, right? Like, and you'll see it, like, every couple hours, it's like at 6, then it's at 1, then it's at 8, then it's at 2, you know, whatever. But on top of that, somebody had taken, and I don't know if it was her opponent or what in this thread, because I didn't bother reading through the whole thing, but they had taken to Reddit to talk about this situation. And not only that, to make it a big deal about her crying, which, one, if you're worried about somebody showing emotions and you can't handle that, grow the F up.
Yeah.
Like, for real. Because that's part of competing. I don't know how much... She could have invested a ton of time. I don't know. Travel money. Use vacation time from work. I don't know. Whatever. To be there. So, like, it might mean something to her. And then have a bunch of crappy things happen. Well, yeah, of course there's going to be some emotion.
And if your favorite football player was doing it, you talk about, you know, how great it is when he showed that emotion.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And that becomes the problem, right? Like, if it's a dude, we're like, oh, it's so great, somebody's showing emotion, or he's not afraid to show his softer side, or whatever other crap they want to say, right? But when it's a woman, it's like, oh, why is she being so emotional? Why is she flipping out because something so small happened, or whatever the hell it is? But check out, okay, I don't know, I'm going to have to probably censor this tweet. Or it's not even a tweet. This is one of the posts that was on Reddit. And I'm only sharing this one because she also shared it, so I know it's okay to be out in the public. And if she listens to this, she won't feel bad about us bringing this up. But one, okay, the person's name, first off, is Dollar Store D, spelled out. So that already tells you how this is going to go. So the post is, hold up, homie got DQ'd because some insecure see you next Tuesday got butt hurt, he rolled dice well. GTFO. I hope Tania sees this and is so embarrassed at being so insanely worthless, she quits Magic forever. The game already has enough retarded without her contributions.
Well, what a winner. What a wonderful human being. I would love to interact with them. It's just
like, there's literally, like, from the top to, like, one, have some respect for yourself and get a real screen name. Gosh damn. Like, not only that, like, he's admitting to being an ass and that he's cheap. So, like, come on, man. But then, like, the language, calling her names. Like, and this is referencing, like, an awkward dice roll situation where she wanted the person to re-roll because it looked like it could have been possibly not done in a completely fair way. And again, it's one of those situations where opponent may have been fair, may not. It's just at the end of a day of other things happening, it kind of just came to a head.
And if your opponent feels like, you know, you did something, you know, it's kind of off kilter, hey, just, you know, if you want to play fair, you know, hey, yeah, okay, I didn't roll that properly. I want everybody to see everything above board. You know, if you're not, I feel like if you're not cheating, you shouldn't have a problem with this.
Dude, one of the things I like to do for fun when I'm, especially if I'm playing in smaller tournaments, like, but I did do this at a Grand Prix. Like, I have these from the original Unglued. There's the rock, paper, scissors cards. There's a rock lobster, paper tiger, and a scissor lizard. So I bust those out, and I do it in a way that I pick first. So there's no, like, shenanigans on if the cards are marked or whatever. And then I let the opponent pick. And then whoever wins goes first, obviously, because there's no ties. I've had a person where I've shown those to them, went to draw my card, and then they just stared at them, and they were like, dude, how is this fair? And then I explained it to them, and then they felt uncomfortable, and I was like, just, okay, cool. We can just roll dice. It's fine. Like, if somebody thought I was doing something unfair or untoward, then cool. Let's just do it in a way we both agree is fair. Like, that's the end of it. It's not a big deal. And the way I understand it, the way she wrote everything out, which wasn't contested to my knowledge, is that I don't think the person got DQ'd. They just called over a judge and worked out how it was going to go, and then they played out the rest of the game. So I'm not even sure this person has their facts right in this rant, but my problem is, like, posts like this get seen by people, and then they have to wonder, like, one, do I even want to play this game? Man, woman, whatever. Like, if this is how people are, why do I want to go to a competitive event? Which, obviously, this isn't how everybody is. This is, you know, the 1 or 2% whatever, but they're the ones that get seen publicly raising a stink, and they're the ones pushing people away.
All it takes is to interact with one person like this, and you never want to play a game again. If I wasn't already playing Magic and talking about Magic, if this was the first person I encountered, I wouldn't still be playing.
Yeah, it's crazy. I just, it's just for, because in my life, I feel like I've done quite a bit to, like, be a positive influence in gaming, like, encourage people to play, like, teach the game to people, you know, whatever. And then every time I see one of these, like, I just want to grab them and shake them.
Yeah.
Like, what's the point of even putting that up there? Other than, like, it only does two things. Either one, it's just going to have people agree with you that already feel that way and whatever anyway. And then everybody else is just going to think you're just an idiot. Like, you're just going to look like an ass. Like, there's no real positive to come out of that.
And the anonymity of the internet makes people feel like, hey, it's okay to be an ass. And other asses who get to remain anonymous will show up and support me in anonymous idiocy, for lack of a better and more family-friendly word.
Yeah, and there's some of those people out there. They strive on that. That's how they get their viewers or their listeners or whatever.
Yeah, because earlier I talked about how people on stream, in some cases, you know, are not that person in reality. There's no doubt in my mind that that's who this person is. They're too comfortable with all this language.
True. Very true.
This is somebody I just know. If I met them, I would not want to interact with them any further.
My thing is this, like, other than having self-respect for yourself. That's the main reason I wouldn't post something like this. But, like, if you want to ever work with other game companies or, I don't know, do anything in the media realm or whatever in the future, like, I don't want this type of crap attached to me.
No, who would?
Why would I ever put that out there? You know what? Actually, I'm going to put this out there. I haven't reached out to Tania or not, but if anybody knows her, point her our direction and see if she's interested in being on the show. Because I'd like to, if she's up for talking about it. Like, I think it's, I mean, we've had a woman on the show before and gave her perspective of what's happening, but like, maybe it's time for another episode.
That's, that is literally why we're here, you know, to, because interactions like this are sadly still too common in our game.
Very true. Hopefully, I mean, she sounds like she's giving it a second chance. She's not quitting playing. She posted that she's going to be in Phoenix. So, good for her, you know, pushing through it, dealing with it, and not letting it ruin her fun that she's already been planning on for at least weeks, if not months. On a lighter note, talking about second chances.
Oh, God, dude. Oh.
You know what else is happening this week, right?
Oh, maybe he wouldn't do it, but he's going to do it.
We get XFL games this weekend.
Are you really planning to? Are you scheduling your football time around this?
Hey, you know how it is. I'm born and bred Texan, and there's more football.
I get that.
So I got to at least give it a shot. And if I'm being real, I almost bought Seattle Dragon season tickets because I could get tickets, like decent seats, for like $40 a game.
Yeah, I was going to say, tickets. If you can run some routes, you can play a slot receiver. Dang it.
So I'm just saying, if you want more football, that's happening this weekend for sure. I will report back on the quality of the games next week.
You know, I'm from the South also, but I mean, other football leagues have been tried several times, and the last time it worked was literally, what, about 60 years ago was the last time anybody successfully competed with the NFL.
Oh, guest time. So this is a fun guest for us to have on. For those of you that don't know, and we've mentioned it before, like me and Brian met through gaming, and our next guest, Aaron Giddings, we met also through gaming. Yeah, actually playing Raw Deal, I believe, the wrestling card game.
Yeah, the there was a wrestling card game, believe it or not, folks.
It did quite well for a while. So,
it
did. The main reason we have Aaron on is, other than just being a friend of ours and a friend of the show, he is the one that's in charge, or one of the people that's in charge of the Hunter Burton Memorial Open that we've been talking about, that raises money for suicide awareness and prevention. And we wanted to give him a chance to come on, talk about that, and really give his perspective with everything going on kind of in that space, and really talk about the charity and the stuff behind it. So it's good to have you on. Welcome, Aaron. How are you doing, dude?
Hey guys, thank you so much for having me on. I am wonderful and super happy to be here.
Yeah, why don't you tell everybody kind of how you got into gaming and everything, and kind of your journey from like your start in gaming to kind of where you are now.
I'm not sure that we have as much time as I would need. We'd probably fill the entire year of podcast for that, but I guess the brief summary is, you know, I've been in gaming since I was, I guess, about 11 years old, and I actually dabbled. I collected sports cards for a long time and happened to walk into a sports card shop and saw some guys playing Magic at a table and thought it was the coolest thing. And so my mom has always been a very open-minded individual, and she was like, hey, you know, if it gives you something to do, you know, I'm all about that. So she let me buy some cards, and that was my first foray into gaming, was playing some Magic the Gathering. I played a lot of coffee table Magic, and hopefully, you know, a lot of people are old enough to know what that truly means, because you know, you had 12 copies of Land of War Elves in your deck, and you didn't really have a theme. You just played green, and you played some cool big stompy things, and you played 12 copies of, you know, whatever card you really liked, and tried to come up with crazy Homerid combos out of Fallen Empire, you know, just stuff like that. And but after that, you know, super funny. I went to work at a game store when I turned 16 and became a manager of a game store shortly thereafter. Went to college, right out of college, went to work for a gaming manufacturer. Did that for 5 years, traveling all over the country, producing actual trading card games. And that led me into owning a game store. So I opened my own game store back in 2008 and quickly grew it to be a 5,000 square foot game store. And then when I ended up selling that to a chain of stores and went on to work for another game store that was mostly online based, did that for a number of years. So as far as my history in the gaming industry, I've been doing it for a very, very long time. And funny, quick side note of that, you know, Daquan, I don't know if you remember how you and I met. Do you remember that story?
How we actually met? No, I don't remember the first day.
There was a WrestleMania in Houston. And
That was WrestleMania 17.
Yep. And they had a booth for the wrestling card game there. Comic Images had a booth there.
Yep.
And I had been playing that in my store for, you know, several months at that point. And we loved the game. And so when my buddy and I were attending WrestleMania walked by your booth, I think we probably annoyed you for a solid couple of hours at WrestleMania Access buying, you know, you had the lunchbox with The Rock and Stone Cold on it. You know, at that point, I think I was, oh man, I don't know. I wasn't old enough to drive really at that point. I think I might've been 15. You know, I don't remember. I still hadn't even started working at the game store at that point. So, yeah, that was crazy. And
you know what's funny? If people really wanted it, I think we could record and I could give a whole episode to fill like an hour and a half of just stories from that single weekend.
Oh, absolutely. I believe it.
Interactions with the wrestlers to like the local store. Because we left that event and we held an event spur of the moment at Browser Game Center in Houston that Saturday night. Like there were so many things that happened that weekend.
And had I known that was going on, I might've ditched the group that I was with and come and played some Raw Deal because I loved that game. Still to this day, I have, I don't know how many 5K boxes of Raw Deal sitting in a closet. So that aside, however, you know, I grew up in your store to some degree, driving all the way down to Waco to play in Raw Deal events. And Brian and I met through, you know, Raw Deal. And I think we had some pretty good road trips together, Brian, when we were driving to play Raw Deal all over great state of Texas.
Can I share a story now? And I think you know which one it's going to be.
Oh, please do. This is one of my favorite stories of all gaming road trips I've ever taken.
So when I first moved out here, I had a really tiny, like a hole in the wall apartment at Oak Cliff. It was not the best neighborhood. It's not the biggest apartment, but we were meeting there to go to Daquan's shop in Waco to play a Raw Deal tournament. And Aaron had forgotten which apartment was mine. So, you know, he just kind of randomly started knocking on folks' doors to see if anybody knew where my apartment was. And to make things even more awkward for a young white guy wandering around Oak Cliff asking people where apartments were, Aaron was wearing a shirt that says, "You know what your problem is? You're stupid."
I did, in fact, wear that shirt. And, you know, it's really funny because I'm not sure that cell phones were much of a thing back then. I don't even know if I owned a cell phone at that point. And I was 16 or 17 maybe, and I was driving a Camaro and parking in a, you know, place that I wasn't familiar with. And I remember though, the person that directed me to Brian's apartment was this little old lady, and she had this just bewildered look on her face when I walked up and asked where this apartment was. And she just looked at me and she just pointed. There was no words. And the look on her face, like, what is this white boy doing asking me for directions
Yeah, and for people who don't know, Oak Cliff is a very colored part of the Dallas community. Very much so.
It did not occur to me.
I've never even been there. Aaron, absolutely.
It just didn't occur to me. You know, I guess, especially when I was younger, I just didn't see it that way. So I started thinking about it when I walked to Brian's apartment, and I got there and I said, oh, you know, I wonder if my car's going to be okay. And then Brian's like, well, I think we've only had like one car stolen this week, was his first response to me. And I just kind of looked at myself and go, that's my Camaro is sitting out in the parking lot. You know, I'm 16 and that's my baby. You used old beat up Camaro, but that was my baby. And I'm like, oh no. And I'm leaving it here to go to Oklahoma. What am I doing with my life?
I believe what actually happened first was, I think I want to say Derek was with us. And he asked if it was okay for us to leave our cars, because there was five or six of us. And I said, you know, most of you can. I'm not sure Aaron should.
I believe you're correct. Did
not have cars nearly as nice as Aaron.
Yeah, so I remember those were great days, you know, and I made some really great friends through Raw Deal and gaming, which is important because, you know, now I'm 36 years old. And these stories that we're talking about, you know, back when I was 15, 16, 17, you know, and Raw Deal was around for a number of years. And I have several of those people that I made friends with during the Raw Deal days that are still friends today. You know, they have been longtime friends, although some of us have drifted apart. You know, they're people I talk to weekly, so in some cases, you know, daily. And actually, Raw Deal brought me together with my friend Chris Hybert, who we've been friends now, I guess it's been 17 years that we have essentially been best friends, and I'm going to be the best man in his wedding here in about a month. So, wow. You know, just it's just crazy to show how gaming can bring you together, which in turn, I guess, leads me into why you guys brought me on to talk a little bit about the charity that I help run. And I guess I want to talk a little bit about how our mission includes gaming, because it's very important. And for those that don't know about the Hunter Burton Memorial Open, Hunter Burton Memorial is the name of the nonprofit foundation. And it was started by Jeff Zandi, who is a longtime staple in the Magic the Gathering community. And by this point, many, many people, at least in Texas Magic gamers, especially in the competitive scene, know Jeff Zandi. I would venture to say that, you know, most people that have been playing Magic for at least 10 years probably had a chance to know or hear about Jeff in some capacity, either through judging or through his Guild Mage activities or through the articles that he wrote for countless sites, including, you know, Star City Games. Just somewhere in there, Jeff was a major player. And he and the Burton family, when Hunter Burton passed away, he joined forces with Donna Burton to make sure that Hunter's life was not in vain. And he took his own life, and they wanted to do something to ensure that other families would not have to suffer through that, and also to remember Hunter for the game that he loved to play, which was Magic the Gathering. And together, Donna and Jeff started the Hunter Burton Memorial Open, which our first year, we only had about 155 players attend. And it was a very competitive Magic tournament. There were very few, if any, side events. It was really just a big Magic tournament in a room. And for the first few years, that's what it ended up being. It grew a little bit here and there. But for the most part, it kind of was just a big Magic tournament where we had a few people come in and talk a little bit about, you know, suicide. And the Burtons really decided that they wanted to take it in a new direction. They wanted to add some different elements to it and make the cause be a major focus, because there are so many people in the gaming industry that shared stories just in those few years of these Magic tournaments about how they had been impacted by suicide, that it truly gave the Burton family, specifically Donna Burton, kind of a new scope of how suicide affects gaming, the communities of gamers that are out there, and how many people had truly been touched by suicide. And that really gave, I guess, Donna a new purpose. And Jeff really wanted to, you know, assist in making sure that the Hunter Burton Memorial Open grew in size to complete the mission that, you know, the Burton family wanted. And they brought me on board to assist with that, just from my history and doing events and being in the gaming industry. And I guess the rest is history as far as how our foundation has gotten to where it is now, because we've now grown it to where our 2019 event had over 1,200 turnstile attendants for the weekend. And it was our first 2-day event. It was our 6th annual event. Also, you know, last year was a very powerful year for us because while we had a lot of amazing accomplishments for our foundation, Jeff Zandi actually passed away 1 month before the event. And it really put us in a rough situation because Jeff was one of our leaders. He was the, I guess, the glue that kind of holds everybody together. And so it made it a crazy year in 2019 because a lot of things were put together last minute. And, you know, we knew we were going to grow and we knew we were going to be a big event. But the resolve that my team of volunteers, that our staff, our judges, Joe Klopchik, who is now one of the leading force behind the actual tournament operations of our foundation, everybody stepped up and came together. And that allowed us to pull off the most successful Hunter Burton Memorial Open we've had to date and segue into what we're doing this year. This year, our big charity event, our fundraising efforts that we're putting forward are catapulting us to a new level. And why that's important is because for several years, we've wanted to start an outreach program. Last year, we announced that we would be launching it. However, due to, you know, losing Jeff and a couple of other pieces, we weren't able to truly get it off the ground the way that we wanted. We did outreach. We went to some conventions. We were able to reach a few gaming communities outside of Magic the Gathering. But this year, we've made it our number one mission to start our new outreach program. And in fact, we're going to do our very first presentation of the outreach program and how it's going to impact gaming communities around the country at this year's Hunter Burton Memorial Open on stage. So I'm super excited about that. We've changed up a few things this year, but more importantly, we've added a whole lot. So not only are we Magic the Gathering this year, but we've also added a board game library so that people, if they just want to come out and play some board games, can make a small donation to the charity and they can check out board games and play an entire selection all day, both days, Saturday and Sunday. And then we also have a number of games coming in. Alter Reality Games is going to allow their Argent Saga Championship to be held at the Hunter Burton Memorial Open this year. So we have additional games added to the event, which just a few years ago really honestly was not a reality. You know, Magic was our focus, and now we're adding all these other games, which is great because suicide affects gaming communities of all kinds. It's not just Magic. This year alone, I have a gaming community that I was very close with for many years, the Dragon Ball Z community. And I learned secondhand that two people that I gamed with this year alone took their own life. So as sad as that was, that, I guess, reinvigorated my drive on why I volunteer and why I make the Hunter Burton Memorial happen with the Burton family. And so that's why it's important that we start expanding into these other gaming groups and do more. So that's just a small taste, but just to give the rundown, Daquan, I know you've talked about it in the past, and I'm sure you've probably broadcast it, but for the Magic the Gathering side, which is still our focal point, you know, we have the big modern 10K tournament on Saturday, which for the first time ever is sponsored by Wizards of the Coast, and they have graciously brought us up to giving out PT invites. So first place for our event this year will not only get their name engraved on a trophy and be able to take home a good chunk of cash, but also it's going to be someone that gets to play on the Players Tour and represent our tournament in, you know, essentially some of the best players in the world. And then we also have a Sunday event. We're going to do Pioneer. We're going to introduce Pioneer to our formats. And that's going to be a 5K tournament. And once again, thanks to an amazing sponsor and the approval of Wizards of the Coast, that event is also going to have a PT invite as well. So we have two PT invites this year, which we have never had before. And that's an amazing accomplishment for us to have grown to that level. But the acknowledgement that that means Wizards of the Coast is giving us is amazing. It means that Wizards of the Coast has, you know, come to a point where they also recognize the importance of our mission in gaming communities and the games that they make. And so together, I feel sure that this year is going to be our best year ever.
You know, there's a couple of things that I don't think you should sell yourself short on. Is that one is just the overall event. It's not just about the tournaments. It really is. It's like a mid-sized Grand Prix feel, you know, where people come in and there's vendors and there's, you know, you had street artists coming in and spray painting, you know, different versions of artwork. And there's the VIP party. There's the crazy cool watch that's part of the prize pool. You know, there's just so many things that are going on with it that make it feel different than just a big prize Magic tournament, which is a big deal, I think. And I think it's hard for people to understand that without actually attending the event. Because the other part of it, which, you know, I brought up last week, was that being there and, you know, I did tons of interviews with people, you know, giving their testimonials where they've been touched or affected by suicide in some way. But even beyond the individual stories, just seeing the players interact at this particular event, it comes with a different feel. Like, though there's a big prize and there's, you know, the cool watch and this, that, and the other, like, you almost hear of nobody complaining about their opponents. There's hardly anyone getting upset about anything. Like, it's just a really different feel of an event, which is awesome. I think we need more of those types of events that aren't necessarily all about the top prize. You know, everybody's there for the cause. I mean, you hear that a lot throughout the weekend where they're like, well, you know, I just really wanted to support it. Or I don't even play Magic that much anymore, but this is the one event I come to. You know, some people are like, oh yeah, we made sure to drive from, I don't know, it was like Chicago or something to make sure they were there for that tournament. Like, it's just really cool to see the players even embrace an event like that because of the importance of what you're supporting.
Well, and it's great that you mentioned that, because I want to utilize that to say this. You know, our mission is a little different than some of the other charities that you might see out there. One, all of those charities do amazing work. Anybody that is out there trying to raise awareness about suicide, we fully support that. What we do, though, is a little different in the sense that we utilize the idea that gaming can save lives. And that is our mission. And our statement is gaming to prevent suicide. And here's why I say that and why we have adopted that. In the beginning of our foundation, our message out there was, if you are struggling, reach out. Well, over the years, one of the things that I realized as I hear all these stories about people that are suffering, that have been affected by suicide, was this idea of being trapped. More importantly, I've suffered from depression and anxiety my entire life. In my adult life, it has compounded and become a bigger, noticeable issue for me personally. And I have had a few battles myself with being very far down at rock bottom. And in those moments, it was actually shortly after I started helping with the foundation a lot more, I had one of those moments where I kind of had a lot of things in life just go very wrong. And I realized at my rock bottom point that I didn't want to reach out. I felt trapped. I felt like there was not a way for me to escape the situation that I was in. There was nobody I felt comfortable turning to. It was a situation where, honestly, it was probably the darkest, if not one of the darkest times in my life. And I did get very lucky in the sense that I was able to pull myself out of that moment. and I was able to visualize and realize what I had just experienced and how I felt, and had to come up with reasons to essentially get up the next day and not allow myself to retreat back into that dark place, because it was very deep. It was very dark. And what it made me realize, and maybe, you know, maybe everything for a reason here, it made me realize that when people are suffering that way, that telling people that they need to reach out when they are suffering is not enough. Because most of the people that are suffering, while everybody is different, it's not truly fair to ask them to reach out, because they probably do not feel comfortable reaching out, not just for the stigma associated with suicide in our society, but in general, when somebody is suffering, one of the biggest things I hear from suicide survivors is the fear of burdening others, the fear that telling somebody what they're going through or talking to somebody will burden them or will interrupt what they're doing in their life. And so what that channeled us to do is change our message. And instead of waiting for somebody to be suffering and reach out, now our message as a foundation is teaching and educating our communities about how kindness, inclusion, and community building can truly save lives. They can change the course of somebody who is suffering, somebody who feels trapped, who feels isolated. It allows everyday people doing something they love to bring somebody to the table that maybe it's that young guy or girl that walks into a game store for the first time. They just moved to the area. They don't know anybody. Maybe they have a troubled past for one reason or another. Maybe they don't have a supportive family. Maybe gaming is their outlet, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they're a super happy person. You know, just because they get to go play a game doesn't mean that they're a truly happy person inside, because most people mask the suffering. So when they're there, maybe gaming is their outlet, and that may be the moment, and that may be the only way, the closest way, the quickest way to communicate and truly get to know somebody that's suffering in an outside the box way, to where you get them to open up or you get them to be involved. And maybe it shows them that little bit of light, that they see something in making a friend, you know, over the table at their Friday night magic. Maybe meeting a, you know, manager at a store that just truly takes the time to sit down and teach them a new game or explain a game to them. Maybe they walk into a store and, you know, they have three opponents and all three opponents were friendly, took the time to learn their name, shake their hand, welcome them to the store for the first time. You know, just a number of different examples of how that one experience could change somebody's perception. Because a game store, as you know, Daquan, as you owned one, just like I owned one, it becomes a home away from home for so many people to escape what they go through in their daily life. And it, honestly, a lot of people walk into a game store and get to be themselves. They get to be the person that they want to be, and they do it so they can be free of judgment to enjoy these, you know, nerd games that we play and love. And back when I was a kid, I got bullied in high school and elementary school even, you know, now that I think all the way back to, you know, some of my early days, I got bullied for playing these games. You know, it was something that was just not socially acceptable. And you look at it today, and I found my game store, and I say, man, if I hadn't found my game store, the game store that I went to, you know, several times a week, that essentially my game store ended up being my babysitter for my mom, who, you know, worked several jobs just to be able to put a roof over our head. For me, the game store was everything. And I don't know that I would be the person I am today without it, and without playing games, you know, of all calibers, miniature games, card games. I think that's something that is overlooked, not just by gaming communities in general, but I think it's overlooked by society. And that's why what we do focuses on gaming communities, to bring awareness to the power that gaming communities can have to truly interact with people on a new and different level that may be suffering. Maybe they just are isolated. Maybe they're just unhappy. You know, maybe suicide is not something that they are truly considering, but they may be very unhappy. They may be in a very dark place, which can lead people down a path that quickly could cause them to have suicidal thoughts that could make them consider, you know, drastic options that are might harm themselves or others. And I truly believe that gaming as a whole can bring people together in a way that gives people an outlet so that they feel more comfortable, that they can open up to be themselves. And truly, if people do not feel isolated and do not feel trapped, I truly believe that that is a way that you can positively impact and change someone's life for the better. And so our fundraiser event, and to go back to what you said, it's different because we're not just there to play magic. We're truly there to put as many people in the building as we can, to make friends, to build our family, our HBMO family, as we have named it. People that come every year. I have people that came and played in our first few events that now don't even play magic, but they want to come volunteer. They want to just come hang out for the weekend. They want to come see what we're doing. And just meet some people, talk to us. Some people that travel in from really far that moved away, and they come in just to hang out for the weekend and be there because the environment, like you said, is just different. It's a weird environment. It's electric almost. You walk into a lot of competitive magic tournaments and you feel pressure. You feel the hustle and the bustle of so many people running to register. And then, you know, the judges are very streamlined. You know, you're just not always comfortable in some big competitive magic tournaments. And the Hunter Burton, the one thing that a lot of people have told me is they feel comfortable. No matter who they sit down against, no matter who they're talking to, you see groups sit down at tables and just converse randomly. It's an amazing feeling to walk around. And I have the honor and the pleasure each year to be able to truly just monitor what's going on and walk around and talk to people. And the feeling you get is incredible because it makes you feel like you're part of something. Whether you're playing games, whether you're making a donation to the charity, or whether you're just there to show support, you know, maybe you can't afford to make a donation, but there are a lot of things you could do just to come and watch, just to come see what's going on. And as I tell people, just walking in the building, you will get a feeling of this amazing inclusion of what we are trying to do and grow. And that in and of itself, I think you're right, Daquan. It truly is different from everything else. And I think it speaks to the mission that we put forward and why I invite everybody to come and enjoy that and try it out for themselves. Because I believe truly that if you come to our event, you will immediately feel included and become part of our family, the HBMO family, and help our mission of spreading that awareness to take back to your gaming communities elsewhere and make that mission of kindness and inclusion part of your mission in your local store, helping make that positive impact.
Man, that's like an amazing bit of salesmanship. And I mean, I'm dead serious. Like, that's one of those things. Like, if I was listening to that like late night and they put up a number, I'm calling it and making a donation.
For real.
But no, I mean, I really kind of rubber stamp everything there. Like, I think it is a different feeling event, and it's the type of thing we need to have more discussion about, more support for, and it's cool that we can do it, you know, kind of with the aura of gaming around it. It's really, really cool. With that being said, are you up for us hitting you with five fire questions?
Let's do it.
Our guests tend to be very sharp, but let's see how they respond when we put their feet to the fire in five fire questions. Okay, so if you don't know, the way this works is I will be asking you three questions on the more serious side, and then Brian, being the comedy relief, will hit you with two lighter questions.
Yuck.
All right.
So yeah, so the first one is, I want to say, like, what was the hardest thing in the beginning of like getting the word out there and the message as you're trying to make that first event happen?
That's a really good question. I think thinking back, our true turning point was realizing that being just another Magic tournament was never going to be the way to get our mission and our message out there and accomplished. So I think our hardest challenge was figuring out how do we go from being just another Magic tournament and giving away some money to try to get people in a room to being something that truly spread a message, that truly got the word out and changed our concept. And I think that was a big turning point because we went out and started finding sponsors. We went out and tried to find local stores that would come on board, you know, and I want to give a shout out to Madness Comics and Games in Plano, Chris Mettler. When we really tried to start turning the page, Chris Mettler made some very generous donations to add some side event prizes. You know, we just didn't have any money. The foundation was small and we really hadn't generated any outside revenue or income to grow or expand. And so for the first few years, we essentially were just a bunch of volunteers throwing a big Magic tournament, and there wasn't any other way to get above and beyond. So when we started having these local stores give us a little bit of extra product for Magic or donate these cool items that we could, you know, start fundraising, that was the moment, the turning point for us, where we were able to really overcome the hurdle of being just another Magic tournament and start getting us out there with, like, for instance, buying in our third year the Star City Games IQ kits. We were able to purchase one of those the very first time in our third year. And our attendance jumped almost double in that 1 year because of the notoriety that it gave us to be able to add the Star City IQ. And at that point, in our fourth year, Star City actually sponsored us and started donating the kit. And that was, I think, the true hurdle getting jumped, was when we were able to have somebody like Star City recognize what we were doing, make that donation of the kit to us, and start advertising and even giving us some articles on their website. And it even led to an article on the mothership, so to speak, the Wizards of the Coast website, about our event and about our foundation. And I think that was the turning point. The fourth year, the third and fourth year, when we started bringing Star City and these other sponsors on board, they truly helped us turn the page and become the basics of the foundation that we are now and growing.
Yeah, I think there's something to that. You know, anytime you start, especially a nonprofit or a new project like that, some of it is people being skeptical and, you know, you don't have the legitimacy behind you yet. So it's cool when you can see a couple of years go by and then you see that first big year of growth, you kind of get that feeling of like, okay, now this is it. So for my second question, outside of a huge monetary donation, obviously, which would help, what would you want for the charity if you could have anything that would be helpful or beneficial to you?
That's an awesome question too. You're full of good questions, Daquan. I like it. It's like you've done this.
I'm getting good at this.
you know, one of the biggest misconceptions about our foundation is that we need money, and money is the biggest driving factor. But the truth is, because we do so much with gaming, we actually need products in the gaming industry more, or as much as, I won't say more, but as much as we would like actual monetary donations. And something that I want to throw in here, Daquan, because I think it's important to note, there's a little bit of a stigma with nonprofit foundations, because a lot of the big ones, you know, you do a little research and they have some executives that make a lot of money. And I'm not bagging on that in any way. You know, all of those nonprofits do good, or at least I'd like to believe that they do good with the money that they raise and the contributions. But I just want to point out that our foundation has zero paid employees. We have never had a paid employee. All of us that work the tireless hours to make this event happen, as you well know, to put on an event of this scale is a lot of man hours. And we have a very small team, and we are all volunteers. And the weekend of, it is all volunteers that come out to help us make it happen. So because of that, that says we need things like magic product. A single booster box of a new magic set actually goes a long way to help us, because we can use it in so many different ways, whether it be prizes, whether that be a something that we give out to volunteers for helping us out, where we put together these little thank you packets. Some of our sponsors donate specific items just to give to our volunteers because they know how much work goes into putting on the event and that we don't pay anybody. You know, everything is volunteer based. So that's their thank you to the staff and the people that help us tremendously. Also, it's not just gaming items that we need. You know, last year we had donations from a place called Park Hill Portraits. They donated having custom portraits done. They donated a $1,000 gift certificate to have a custom portrait done that was a silent auction item. We had Panini, who is one of the big trading card manufacturers in the world now. They actually donated a number of boxes of sports cards to us to be able to put in the silent auction and give away as random prizes. You know, we had just these different items that were not even gaming related that we were able to put into silent auctions to help raise money for the foundation. We were able to put them on the prize wall so that players playing inside events all weekend could redeem their prize chips to get these cool items that were, you know, not the standard magic prize wall things that you're used to at, you know, Grand Prix style events or some of the Star City events. It truly gave a unique feel. So just about anything that you could think of to be a silent auction item, a prize, a thank you gift to our volunteers, any of those types of things would be huge for our foundation, because every year we use everything and it goes out to make sure that our event is unique and, more importantly, that it is something people want to come back to and support and take back home with them the message that we are spreading. Because if they have a great time and they feel like we're different than just another big magic tournament, they'll remember that and they'll take that message home with them and spread that in their local community. And ultimately, that's what we want.
Cool. And I can actually vouch for that. That, like, I, even when I came and worked, like, I did not get paid a penny for being there for 2 days. And we did a hell of a job, you know. And the prize wall, totally legit. Lots of cool stuff on there. And you even got sponsors that made, like, really nice custom pens, you know, like writing utensils. And we had carry bags and, you know, just really nice stuff to give away to the volunteers. So, you know, props to everybody that pitched in and supported last year, for sure.
Ultra Pro and Legion have come back on for doing those participation bags again this year. As you mentioned, the pens, Retro 51, they've donated those to be part of our VIP packages. And this year they're going to be sequentially numbered. So there's a limited number of them and they'll be sequentially numbered. It's amazing now, you know, looking back over the years, just what these amazing sponsors and people making such generous contributions have done. And we are so very thankful and appreciative of that, because we would not be here without them.
And then my final question before I hand you over to Brian is, if you could give like a 2 to 3 sentence, like quick pitch, like, I don't know, I guess we'll call it like a support message to somebody, what would you tell them if they're trying to get a charity event or charity organization off the ground? Like, what piece of advice would you give them?
You know, I'll be honest. I'm glad that you went the direction you went with that question and it be charity organization and a charity event, because I was afraid you were going to say game store. And my advice to everybody when it comes to game stores is no, don't do it.
Well, I just feel that way about running a business in general, but
yeah, it's hard. But when you say that about the charity organization specifically as a charity, well, I'll do a quick charity event and I'll do a charity organization. You know, as a charity organization, I truly believe that if you are dedicated and passionate about making a positive impact for your cause, starting a charity organization is actually not that difficult. There are some hoops that you have to jump through, obviously, you know, with the taxes and the government and whatnot. But it's actually very, very simple to start. The hard part of having a charity organization is the dedication and the grind. But truly, if you are absolutely passionate about the message and what you are trying to accomplish to make that positive change, the grind and the work that you put in will not always feel like a grind. You know, I have seen the work that I put into the Hunter Burton Memorial, and truly, I look at it as this, almost like working out, right? You don't want to go to the gym, you don't want to exercise, but when you start running on that treadmill or you get to lifting weights and you're 20 minutes in, you know, it's hard work and you're like, man, this is miserable. I didn't want to do this. And you get there and you start working out. You're like, you know, I'm glad I did. You know, you leave the gym and you're like, oh, I powered through it. I feel better about it. That's the same way I feel with a charity organization, because if you're truly passionate about it, there are going to be days where it feels like a grind, but 9 times out of 10, you're going to love what you do, and it makes you power through those hard days. And at the end of the hardest days are when you feel truly accomplished, because you get through them and you say, man, that was a rough day, but I'm so glad, because the cause and the mission and, you know, what I'm passionate about is stronger now because I powered through that day. So I truly believe that starting a charity organization is a lot easier than people probably think it is. As far as a charity event goes, that's the kicker, right? The moment you start saying, well, now I gotta raise some funds here. I gotta have a fundraiser event. I've got to figure out a way for this nonprofit to support itself. That is the true part that takes a lot of work. And honestly, just in full disclosure, I truly believe that it takes connections, it takes diligence and time to build relationships with other nonprofits, with other people that may have connections that can help advertise for you, that can help spread the message, other people that will get out there and be your champions in communities that you want to target for your charity events. I do believe I'm not going to say luck, because I don't necessarily believe in the luck factor when it comes to something like this. I truly believe that the hard work, dedication, and passion shows through all of that. But I would say that maybe there's a tiny bit of luck that has to go into it when it comes to the event itself, because you really have to try to make the right connections with people, with organizations. And that may actually be the hardest part of having a charity organization or putting together a charity event in this case. You really have to just know the right people. And I think that is something that, with that passion, that work ethic, that grind that you put forward, I think those relationships come. And the more work that you put in, I think more people notice that passion and they notice that, and you make those connections organically. But I would say that's the biggest challenge, is specifically that need with an event to try and make those connections to help you get your word out there, because it's truly difficult to do it, you know, as a one person show. It really does kind of take a village.
You know what's funny, and not to make light of the whole thing, but I'm realizing I love to talk, and I realize why all my friends put up with it, because y'all like to talk too.
That's true. I'm sorry, I went over your 3 sentences.
No, it's totally okay, man. It was good information. So, Brian, why don't you hit him with your 2 questions?
All right. To lighten it up a little bit, first of my 2 questions, of all the many, many reasons to hate the Dallas Cowboys, what's your favorite?
Brian.
Well, we used to be friends, y'all.
Yeah, this is basically for the quad's reaction.
Well, I guess I can scratch you off this year's event. Man, that's unfortunate. All right. No, honestly, you know, I don't know that I truly hate the Dallas Cowboys. I think I have just, now I'm kind of numb to it, living in Dallas as a New Orleans Saints fan.
Preach.
Yeah, it's difficult. I think because Cowboys fans, in a lot of ways have had so much success from 25 plus years ago.
I was going to say, we had that a long time ago.
Right, right. That I think it just feels like they were kind of handed the silver spoon every year, right? You know, they were the Dallas Cowboys, America's team. And the fact that nobody can let that down, right? America's team. Well, I don't know. It's hard. It's hard when that is the strong point and the argument factor, right? Well, or America's team. My stepdad is a huge Cowboys fan, and his argument is always the same. There's never any difference. It's always America's team, five rings, you know? And I guess that's hard for me to cope with, because as a Saints fan, you know, we have our one ring, and I'm proud of that. I know that, you know, we're not as accomplished as a number of other great dynasties and teams in the league, but it does bother me a little bit that a team that, you know, has not had that success in 25 years, I guess as Jerry Jones gets on and talks in his interviews, the entitlement just kind of seeps out of his interviews, and I'm not a big fan.
Oh, dude, let me tell you like this. The biggest problem, and this is coming from a Cowboys fan, is that Cowboys fans tend to be overly Texan in their personality. Because, like, you grow up in Texas, you don't even realize that you are overly supportive of your state, right? Like, but I've had friends come from out of state, and they're like, y'all just put y'all's flag on everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, yeah. Like, one of the things, and somebody showed me this meme, but it was like, how can you identify all the Texans in the room? You literally start singing, the stars at night are big and bright, and see who fucking claps their hands.
Yeah.
Like, it's the same thing. It carries over to the team. Like, you're just too proud, even when you don't have a reason to be.
I've been in Texas so long that I see what you mean. I've been here since I was 9 years old. So I guess everybody calls me an honorary Texan.
Oh, God.
I'm still Louisiana at heart. But I will say, you are absolutely right. And that is the most elegant way that somebody has ever described that. Daquan, I've got to give you props there.
Hey, I'm just keeping it real. So, Brian, what's your next question?
As we mentioned earlier, we're all pretty huge wrestling fans. If you were a wrestler, Aaron, what would your gimmick be?
Goodness gracious. You would think of all the years that I've been a wrestling fan that I would have this thought out and planned. But I got to tell you, you know, The Miz, believe it or not, is my hero, because I feel like he's one of us, right? Exactly. He was the kid that was a super wrestling nerd and then grew up and he got the chance to become a wrestler. Then he became a really famous wrestler. Then he married the, you know, supermodel wrestler. And I don't know. To me, The Miz has the best gimmick because he's always just been this kind of arrogant, you know, ridiculous concept of just himself, but, you know, on, I guess, another level, right? It goes to 11. It truly describes The Miz's character. So for me, I don't know, honestly. I don't guess I've ever thought about it, because I've never thought about wanting to be a wrestler. I've just always enjoyed the athleticism and the, you know, ridiculousness of the stories, you know, my novellas, if you want to call it that. So it's one of those things where, to me, I don't know that I have a gimmick, but if I had to choose something, it would have been something to do along the same lines as maybe The Brood, Brian.
Oh, you know, yeah.
I always loved the gothic stuff. You know, I'm a heavy metal fan. I grew up, was a kid that wore a lot of black in my day of schools. And I think that something truly gothic, you know, maybe Gangrel, The Brood, something along those lines. Aleister Black, today's world, we'll relate to something maybe younger generations know. Aleister Black, I love his gimmick. Yeah. I love what he does. You know, he's truly a wrestler. He's got a very straightforward gimmick. It's very gothic, but at the same time, it's not, right? There's not a lot of flashy anything. It's not really fake. It's kind of him just being him, and it just really looks cool. That's probably what I would shoot for, something along those lines.
Those are the best gimmicks, where the guys are just, it's kind of their own personality, but it's just a little bit more jacked up, like The Rock. That largely is who The Rock is. He just plays it up more for the camera.
Absolutely. I think they've been the most successful. I think John Cena, you know, that way. The Rock is that way. I just truly think there are a lot of wrestlers that have been the most successful gimmicks in the years. You know, Shawn Michaels and a number of others, Stone Cold Steve Austin, that when they truly hit their successful points was really just basically their personality with a megaphone.
Austin decided to be, you know, just a beer-swilling Texas redneck, and that's, you know, that's pretty much who he is.
Right, right. I think The Undertaker might be the one that breaks that chain, because, you know, now that The Undertaker has retired and you see interviews of him, which, you know, prior to him retiring, you really didn't ever see interviews with him out of character, if at all. And now you see him out of character and you're like, wow, that couldn't be farther from the person. Yeah. You know, The Undertaker is not this very stoic guy. He's actually kind of a big redneck from Houston. So, you know, always crazy to see that. But yeah, I truly believe that a lot of the successful gimmicks are always just people that have their personality on blast. And I respect that. I think it's awesome that they can use that platform for it.
When they did the ESPN 30 for 30 about Ric Flair, they interviewed Taker, and they said the thing that just they could not wrap their head around was going to Undertaker's house and having him fix everybody pancakes. Just, you
know. Right.
Obviously, you know he's not an undead wizard, but it just it's still fourth wall breaking to see him be a normal human being.
Okay, so we're running a little long, but I still want to take a chance here and roll into our favorite segment that we have on the show, our dinner table talk. And really, I kind of want to close out on this one being more of an advice segment. And kind of with everything we've been talking about through the show, you know, about suicide, about the charities, you know, how hard it is to communicate it. You know, one of the things we brought up on the show before is that it's especially in the Black community, like, we don't talk enough about mental health, especially among the men. Like, it's just a thing you don't do. It's like a sign of weakness. You know, it distracts from you getting other stuff taken care of that you need to handle, you know, just all kinds of things.
We're told it's for white people and Black people can't afford that kind of thing.
Yeah, for real. So I think I want to have each of us give a bit of advice on how we can encourage more of these conversations. Like, what is something you would tell somebody to help someone who needs to talk about it, to be able to reach out to someone, or just to help prevent somebody from getting into that headspace? You know, anything along those lines. Because for me personally, one of the things I would probably say is to start out by being the example yourself. I can say I'm in a Facebook group that is for Black men to talk about emotional and serious things. And even within that group, there are still people that are like uncomfortable and have trouble speaking up. And, you know, when the deep conversations start, like, you can tell they're giving like the minimal input or whatever, because they're afraid of getting blasted for something. And even in that group, I have made the effort to be like, when there's a tough question or it's an awkward question, I'm like, cool, I just put it out there. I'm just like, yeah, here's how I would deal with it. Here's how I handle those things. Yeah, that stuff happens to me or whatever. And you would be amazed how much that gets conversations going. You know, when somebody says, well, I had this weird situation happen, or, you know, how do you guys deal when you have this type of pressure coming from this thing? Or how do you handle this job issue or relationship thing or whatever? You know, not realizing that all of those things, when they pile on, add that giant pile of pressure to somebody's mental state. And that's kind of like the beginning of how things travel downhill. So if you can give somebody the tools or the advice or whatever to deal with all those things as they're coming at them, you can keep them further away from that break point. So, you know, for me, that's my two cents there. It's just like, lead by example, be the one that's willing to put yourself out there and have those tougher conversations. Like, I'm fortunately in a place where I don't have deep negative thoughts. So the thing I can do to help somebody else out is to just put it out there and be the one that's like, okay, cool. I'll lead and put myself out there first. Then as other people speak up, I can help them with their issues or their problems or whatever. Or they can at least come to me and know that, like, hey, here's this other dude who's willing to talk about it. So let's do that, you know? So I don't know, Brian, what would you say is some advice you would get? Or Aaron, whoever wants to go next.
I can go next, and I would say just, you know, to for people to remember that, you know, it mental illness is an illness, and to treat it with the same way you would treat somebody with an illness. You would never tell anybody, you know, to just get over their cancer. You would understand how stupid that sounded if you said it aloud. You know, you wouldn't tell anybody, you know, oh, okay, well, you know, you've got Parkinson's, but, you know, it'll be better tomorrow. You know, no, you would realize that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, that's a good point.
There's no one answer on how you can affect or help someone. But just from my experience, I think, Daquan, what you're mentioning is something that is very underrated, because part of the biggest issue we see in society is there's a stigma associated with the word suicide, with the thought of suicide. And truly, whether it's mental illness or whether it's just honestly so many pressures from life or society that have you down, you know, we look at it as adults differently than I think how young people look at it. I think as adults, we see these pressures in life and we just see these, you know, terrible depths of debt, you know, monetary debt, or job problems, relationship problems, family problems, drug problems, just these things that are just so overwhelming that when, you know, a bunch of them kind of pile up, that overwhelms somebody. That in and of itself can be enough. You know, no mental illness needed, just basic life factors not going right can cause someone, you know, to consider suicide. And I think the other side of that is when it's younger people. You know, our younger generations, and honestly, it's really tough, because the other day I talked to somebody and she said, my son suffers, you know, with suicidal thoughts, and I've had to try to seek help for him. And I'm having this conversation and I'm thinking, I'm telling her kind of what I would suggest for a high schooler, you know, or someone that is of that age. And it turns out her son was eight years old. And the moment that you hear that, to know that an eight-year-old has the concepts of what taking their own life is and wanting, you know, to say that out loud. And thankfully, the mother having the wherewithal to take the steps needed to ensure that their child received help. Not everybody's that lucky to have that mom. Not everybody is eight where your mom is still so involved or your parents are so involved. A lot of teenagers pull away naturally, whether there's issues in life or mental health issues. And when you start saying, well, to look at the signs of youth, they're already naturally pulling away from their parents, from authority figures, because we just all did that, right? As teenagers, we just all kind of pulled away and did our own thing, and we're embarrassed about, you know, growing up and the things that are associated with that. And, you know, that boy that you think is cute or that girl you think is cute and those types of things. And you really just kind of retreat away from your parents naturally. Well, when you stack on pressures of being bullied or pressures of not necessarily fitting in, those types of things, they just pull you away farther when you're young. And that's why, you know, I say a couple of different things. One is, if I have to tell somebody something, first and foremost, it is be the positive change. Just like you said, Daquan, be the person that leads by example. A few years ago, I started speaking at the beginning of the Hunter Burton Memorial Open. And the first thing that I did was I got up there and I talked about what I had gone through. I talked about my recent battles with depression. And as someone who is in the professional world now, there's risks that come with that. People people view it differently. And so when your job starts realizing that you, you know, you have those issues, to me, that was a huge step, because I didn't ever want that to impact my professional career. And I know there are a lot of people out there that feel that same way. And then I got up on a stage in front of, you know, at that point, about 600 people in front of a bunch of cameras and people videotaping. And I spoke about the things that I was recently going through, the battles I was having with depression and anxiety. And it was this huge weight off my shoulders. So to me, that is just my message, is be the positive change. Whether you are a person that is not going through it, but wants to help people that are, or whether you are someone who is going through it, I just offer this piece of advice of just go get it off your shoulders. Go talk. Whether you do it publicly, if you are scared to death to talk publicly and be in front of a crowd, and you're dealing with the issues of suicide in your head and the consideration of taking your own life, I urge you, if you hear this, if I speak to you, to go do the most unthinkable thing, which is go in front of that crowd of people and tell them what you're going through. And that sounds absurd, but the idea of knowing that when you disclose that to a group of people, the idea that they're going to be receptive and you faced a fear, and when you tell those people, if you go tell a group of people in today's world, I'm suffering and this is what I'm going through, those people around you, that group of people, are going to be receptive. Somebody in that group is going to reach out to you and say, I got you. I understand. How can I help? Or they're going to say, I feel the same way. Believe it or not, I went through something similar. Let's talk about it. And then immediately you bond with somebody and you see that other people are going through similar things. That goes for adults, that goes for youth. So lead by example. And if you're the one suffering, face that fear and tell somebody. Because that's what it is. It's fear. It's fear of being judged. It's fear of being persecuted for what you're suffering through. And the honest truth is, in today's world, there's no reason to hold it in. You're not burdening anybody. You're not troubling anybody. Just open up and tell somebody how you feel, what you're going through. And if you're that person that is fortunate enough to not be going through that, be the person that just talks about openly what you have seen, the idea of what you go through, the troubles that you incur. Because believe it or not, something to you that you brush off, and Daquan, you're kind of a hero to me in the sense that I feel like you take a lot of things in stride that may have really ground my gears over the years, and I mentioned it to you and you're like, it's just not really something you should stress out about. It'll be okay. Well, that's a prime example of something that maybe you, as a person who doesn't deal with the thoughts of suicide or depression, you're dealing with something and you've gone through it and you have a completely different perspective of how to deal with it and get around it and feel better about it. And just for somebody who is suffering to hear you get out and talk about how you've dealt with problems or things that you have worked through, or just giving your feedback when people are speaking up, that can make a huge difference, because people see that and immediately they go, oh, wait, I'm not alone. I'm not alone. Somebody out there is going through the same thing I am. That's huge. That is absolutely enormous. And that's part of our mission and part of what we do. So Daquan, I appreciate what you do. The speeches that you have given in the past, talking, you know, at the Hunter Burton last year, it was really moving. And honestly, I think you are a true role model in the gaming community as far as, you know, how you set a precedent for being available and able to help and always being willing to be that front runner to assist and spread the message of positivity in gaming.
Man, all I can say is it's some good home training. That's all I can say.
My message, Daquan, is we need more Daquans. That's what it really is.
I want to second everything he just said. Really, we give him grief about being a Cowboy fan, but he good people, honestly.
Everybody has flaws.
All right. On that note, let's get out of here. Aaron, why don't you tell everybody how they can find you on social media and anything you want to give them about the charity?
Absolutely. Thanks, Daquan. And again, thank y'all for having me on. The best way to find us is HunterBurtonMemorialOpen.com. Again, that's HunterBurtonMemorialOpen.com. That's our website. You can make donations on there if you can't attend and want to contribute. You can find information just about who we are, what we do, if you just want to learn a little bit more about our foundation or our events. And also all of our event details, pre-registration, hotel discount codes, all of that stuff is on that website. You can also find us on Facebook. Just go to the search bar, type in Hunter Burton Memorial Open, and it'll bring us right up, and you will be able to be a part of our Facebook group or our Facebook page, where we post lots of updates about what we have going on and where we will post a lot of stuff about our upcoming outreach program, where you and anybody else can start having events or meetups in your local game stores to help spread awareness about suicide and help make community positive impact.
Cool. Brian, where can they find you?
I am DL Caesar. That is spelled just like the Roman Emperor on YouTube, Twitch, and Twitter. And Alan's Ever After is our family YouTube channel.
And as always, I am Power Dragon, PowerDragon. You can find me on most social channels, lately streaming on Twitch on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Thursdays. Almost got that wrong. And doing a lot over on YouTube, so check out my YouTube page. I actually just did an interview. I'm starting a series where I'm going to be interviewing game stores owners about their stores and how they differentiate themselves. So the first one's up now. It's actually done really well, so check that out. But that's where we're going to leave it for this week. Want to give thanks again to Aaron and everybody who's listening, wherever you're listening from, whenever you are listening. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and good night. If you have a chance, please check us out on Patreon at patreon.com/colorofmagic. You can also find us on Facebook at Color of Magic. We're also over on Twitter and Twitch at Color of MTG. And we have a website you can check out, colorofmtg.com. Please share our episode with your friends and help us grow our base. As always, every little bit helps, and we appreciate your support.